Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
This episode is brought to you by Burlap and Barrel, a public benefit corporation working directly with smallholder spice farmers around the world to source unique, beautiful spices for professional chefs and home cooks.
You're listening to Item 13, an African food podcast, and I'm your host, Yom Akwaku. Every week, we'll delve into the delicious world of African food, including chefs, curators, and bloggers. Here's the show.
Welcome to Item 13, Tayo.
Thank you so much, Yon. I'm so happy to be here.
Yeah, I appreciate you coming on. I've been following your account for a while now. I was attracted to it because it was called Low Carb Africa, as we're all trying to reduce the amount of carbs we have in our diets. And then just learning more about your story and how you ended up doing the work that you do, I thought it would be an interesting story to share with the audience. So I'm glad to have you here and look forward to what we get down to today.
Thank you so much.
So wanted to start with you. What do you want to tell, I guess, the audience about yourself, where you're from, where you grew up, just to get a sense of who you are before we delve into your full story?
Sure. My name is Tayo Oredola. I am originally from Nigeria. I was actually born in Nigeria and came to the United States in my 20s. I am a software engineer. I have an engineering background.
Oh.
And I'm still working as a software engineer. And so I blog on, I usually say I'm a software engineer by day and a blogger by night. Because that's exactly what I do.
Yeah.
I live in Austin, Texas, and married with two kids, my son and my daughter. And let me see what else know about me. An interesting fact about me, my mom had seven girls and no boys. So
I'm the third of seven girls.
And I have not met another family with seven girls and no boys. So I'm still searching.
Do you think she was holding out for a boy? That's amazing though, to have seven sisters.
She was
fun.
Yeah, she was definitely holding out for a boy, but God had a different plan, so that did not happen.
Yeah. So I wonder then where and how did you learn how to cook, even before we get into like your specific?
I come from a family of great cooks. My grandmother had a restaurant in Benin. That's the Edo State in Nigeria. And I still literally have memories of the jollof rice from that restaurant. I mean, it left an impression on me that I can still remember the smell and the taste of it. And my mom she's wildly cooked. I mean, she cooks dishes from almost every state in Nigeria. I mean, states we never lived in. She can cook Igbo dishes, Calabar dishes. She can cook dishes from everywhere. And I think I really learned a lot about spices from her and how to spice up my dish. Because, I mean, her food was always so incredible that when I was in boarding school in Nigeria and we had visiting day, all my friends would gather to eat the food my mom cooked. Like, no kidding. And they had food from their parents, but they were always in my corner, like, wanting to eat my food.
I can imagine. You were that one person. I also went to boarding school in Ghana, so I can almost imagine it, like a visiting Saturday when parents would eat their food. There'll always be the one person whose food was always like top notch and everybody.
Yeah, that was my mom. So I got all my training from her.
Nice, nice. And so you had that background experience, then you moved to the States. And then after all of that delicious jollof rice and all that, you decide to go keto to give up carbs. What which is like to as to the African food aficionado, that's just wrong.
I know.
So what led you to keto? What led you to a low carb diet?
I promise you, it was not an easy decision. Like when I started researching about it and found that I was gonna have to give up my jollof rice and my fufu, I was like, this is not gonna happen. I mean, it took me almost 2 years from when I started researching to actually implement it. Because like every African that grew up eating African food, the thought of giving up our food is like, you just want to starve to death. Like, what am I going to eat now, you know? Yeah. So, but I was at a point in my life where I was having a lot of really weird symptoms and weird things going on with me that I could not understand. I've always had migraines all my life. Mm, I mean, even growing up in Nigeria, exactly. Can you imagine how terrible that is? Mm-hmm. And when I was a kid growing up in Nigeria, they never diagnosed it as a migraine. Unfortunately, malaria is like a blanket diagnosis.
Yeah, everybody gets malaria.
So I was told I had malaria, but my mom told me that. She always wondered why mine was different. Mm. She said, out of all her kids, I was the only one that would hold my head and scream. And she said the malaria medication never worked on me. Mm. So I never got diagnosed, but I remember the pain and the nausea. But I thought that was how everyone experienced malaria. And then when I came over to the States, I kept having the weird headaches. I couldn't understand what was going on. And then I started, you know, working a very, very high stress job. Mm-hmm. And suddenly I started having migraines with aura. And I remember the first day it happened to me and I thought I was losing my mind. I mean, suddenly I'm seeing all these wavy lines and all these lights. And I was holding my phone, but I couldn't see it because it was all blurry. And I remember screaming because I thought, oh, my God, what is happening to me? Am I losing my mind? Am I about to die? Like, what is this? And of course, I was rushed to the emergency, and the doctor said, "Oh, yeah, you have migraines with aura," and then he proceeds to lecture me about this is just another phase of migraines. It's worse because the auras themselves are extremely nauseating, and it comes like a full 30 minutes before the migraine, and you just know something bad is going to happen. And my migraines began to last 2 to 3 days. They became just debilitating, and even when they passed, I will have what is called a migraine. It felt like a migraine hangover, where I couldn't still function for a few days after the migraine had passed.
Wow!
So I'm dealing with these migraines, and when I'm not having a migraine, I'm having a headache. I mean, it was just a lot of pain going on in my head region, and there were other weird things that I couldn't understand, like. I had a lot of vertigo. I was constantly dizzy, feeling like I'm about to, you know, fall. And so my doctor then, he just treated every symptom differently. And he called everything by a different name. For the headache, you have migraines. For the vertigo, yeah, you have vertigo. For the nausea, yeah, you have nausea. You know, so I had all these different diagnoses.
Right.
And a bunch of pills. I was just popping in like Tylenol.
I can imagine. That's so frustrating, though.
Yes, it is. I kept wondering, why me? Like, why is no one else feeling what I'm feeling? Yeah. Like, what's going on with me? And then I was very active. I used to work out almost every day. I did CrossFit for almost a year.
Oh, wow. Like the CrossFit.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
I was really active. But then I had to actually quit CrossFit because the vertigo and the nausea didn't work because CrossFit is very high intensity. And I kept feeling like I was about to fall. And I'm like, okay, something is going wrong here. So I quit CrossFit. And so I quit working out. And then the weight began to pile on. And so I'm having all these weird symptoms. I'm gaining weight.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously, the quality of my life was severely impacted. Because I'm like, what is wrong with me? And then I started really researching food, like just reading about food and nutrition and about how things you eat affect your body. And all my research eventually led me to the keto diet. And when I first saw it, I'm like, this looks really interesting. I mean, I like the idea of not being hungry because yeah. I like food. I mean, I really like food. And I cannot just eat salads all day or something
right, bland. Yeah.
I need richness. You know, I need the spices. Yeah. I need, you know, something filling and satisfying. And I like the idea that the keto diet offered that, you know, you could eat all these healthy fats and be full and not be hungry. But of course, I have to give up rice and fufu. I'm like, oh, no, this is not going to happen. So we moved. My family, we were living in California at that time. Okay. And we moved to Austin, Texas. And after we moved, my symptoms just got worse. I guess it was the different, you know, Austin has its own allergies and all kinds of stuff going on. And my symptoms got worse and I started getting quite depressed. You know, I was not happy. I'm just feeling run down every single day. And someone somewhere mentioned the keto diet again. And so I said, you know what? I have to choose. I mean, I had to really sit down and have a conversation with myself. That are you going to give up, you know, rice and, you know, fried plantain and fufu and feel good or or feel like this for the rest of your life? And I'm like, you know, what's the worst that can happen? I'm just going to try it. So at this point in time, I had no idea that this diet was going to help with my other symptoms. I was just looking to lose weight.
Okay. Oh, and so I see. So that was the initial.
That was
more about losing weight than
it was about losing weight.
Okay. Okay.
And then I started and my headaches disappeared. I was like, no, this is weird. I mean, even when I wasn't having a migraine, I had a headache almost every day. I had learned to live with a constant headache.
Yeah.
And I'm like, what is going on? My headaches disappeared. And then 1 month, 2 months after, no migraines. And I was like, wait a minute, can this be the food? And I refused to believe it. I refused to believe it was the food. And so my friend invited me over to her house and serves me jollof rice.
After you've been doing keto for a few months.
For 2 months, yes.
Yeah.
She served me jollof rice. And I went, you know what? I don't think it's the food. I'm just going to eat this. Enjoy this delicious meal of jollof rice. And I dived into it and it was so good. And I got back home and like clockwork, the headache started. And it graduated into a migraine by nighttime. And so now I went digging in to really read about the effect of how keto heals the body. And I was amazed to realize that, oh my God, all these symptoms I was having, weird symptoms that no one could find what the root of the problem was because I had developed some kind of insensitivity to some carbohydrate foods.
That's interesting.
And it was eye-opening, it was life-saving. I mean, I became a keto, like, minister. Like, anyone who came around me, I'm like, hey, you know, you should try this diet. And all my Nigerian friends would just roll their eyes. Like, what are you even talking about?
Yeah, and I can imagine because, like, a lot of, I don't know if we talked about this offline or when we started. On the show, but like a lot of our foods are carb heavy, right? And that's what is challenging, right? So to say you're gonna give up one, the staple jollof, but then two, fufu and all of the other swallows and stuff that go with our foods.
Exactly.
That's tough. And so then how what do I want to tackle first? Oh, your family. So you said you were married, you have kids. Like, are you cooking at this point? Are you cooking separately for yourself? Like, how are you managing? Because my guess is you're probably the person that cooks for the family.
Yes. So my husband is also a really great cook. So he cooks sometimes.
Okay.
But I have, you know, I'm the one that I have a meal plan, you know, that decides what's for lunch or something.
Yeah.
Frees up brain space.
Yeah.
So, what I try to do is, like, my daughter, she's 8, and she loves my, like, my cauliflower rice. Like, I cannot eat cauliflower rice without her being by my side. She'll eat it with me. But I'm not putting them on a keto diet. I try to find things that we can both eat where I have to make some substitutions. So, for instance, I will make, you know, say fufu and egusi soup. And if my family eats the fufu, then I'll make my cauliflower fufu or my coconut. I'll make my own substitution. That way we can have meals that we share without me cooking everything from scratch for both of us. I mean, for me and the rest of the family.
Okay, then that's not so bad then.
It's not so bad. And my chicken and meat recipes, I mean, there are recipes I created for my blog that became a staple in my house because my kids tasted it and now we eat that particular recipe like twice a week because they love it.
Right. So then actually speaking of your blog then, so how do you go from, okay, I'm doing this thing to make me feel better in terms of my health, my family's kind of sort of getting into it. How do you go from that to saying, okay, now I want to share what I'm making in my kitchen with the rest of the world?
Let's see. So after I started on the keto diet, I began to experiment with different, you know, different creations. Some of it was online. I mean, some was already online and I took inspiration from, you know, different places. Mm-hmm. And I began to create this food. And then family and friends started asking me about it. That way, you know, you make fufu with cauliflower. How do you do that? And then people started noticing the interest was building. But I was still I didn't think about starting a blog till my husband goes, "No, babe, you should start a blog." And I said, "No." I'm like, "Why am I going to start a blog?" Like, I didn't really know a lot about blogging, what it entails, what it's about, if they even make money. I had no clue. And he must have told me seriously, maybe 5 times. And the 5th time, he was like, "Babe, you should really look into this." Like, he was insistent. And I'm like, "Okay, wait, let me do some research." And I went online and for days I'm just researching other food bloggers. I'm researching, you know, those that are very profitable, what they do. I joined all these food blogger Facebook groups and I was amazed that, wait a minute, there are people that are actually full-time bloggers and they make money. I didn't know that was a thing. I thought all bloggers were probably bloggers. Right? I thought people just blogged randomly what was kind of going through their minds and stuff like that, or just what I had for lunch, you know. But I realized really quickly that this was a whole different, there was a whole world out there that I could share my recipes with. And I wasn't even looking at just Africans, I mean, just, you know, Nigerians in Nigeria. I'm thinking, a lot of my friends here that were Nigerians had never heard of the keto diet.
Yeah.
So I was like, okay, well, let me try. And then, you know, the blog was born.
Yeah, and I mean, to your point, like, about not making it just Nigerian, it looks like you have recipes from all over the continent, right? Like, I see Kenyan recipes. I see stuff from South Africa and all of that stuff. So how did you... I mean, one, so you sort of mentioned that, you know, you wanted to expand beyond Nigeria, but then how are you balancing, like, the authentic recipes from all these different places, especially places that you're not from, with, you know, your recipe development to make it more keto friendly or more low carb friendly? And then, let's do that first.
that was a bit challenging at first. And in the early days, I kind of stayed away from things I wasn't familiar with. Because, you know, I was kind of being really careful. And then I had to really rethink my strategy, because if I'm only going to cook Nigerian food, we only have a certain number of Nigerian dishes. Mm. So I don't want to put like 100 Nigerian recipes and then be done and then not know where else to look. So from the beginning, I decided to incorporate not only other African dishes, but actually take like standard American dishes and throw in some of my African spices. Mm. I just really created fusion of dishes just to make it interesting. And of course, I worried a bit about the authenticity of the recipes, because if I make a Kenyan sukuma wiki, how am I sure that a Kenyan will taste it and go, yeah, this is how we do it, you know?
Yeah.
So when I do recipes like that I'm not familiar with, I do a lot of research. Mm. I mean, I watch a lot of YouTube videos, and I look at those videos that are made not by professionals, by, you know, the mothers in Kenya,
yeah,
like old YouTube videos, because I want to see how is it authentically done. And so when I get all this information and I put it in my blog, I always mention the authentic recipe. For the authentic recipe, this is what is included.
Oh.
But I'm also going to add this and a little this and a little that, just to spice things up.
Okay. That's so interesting. And it's true what you say about YouTube too, because like I've gone down the YouTube rabbit hole sometimes looking for recipes, and you're right. Sometimes it's not, nothing against, like, obviously I'm talking to you, a food blogger, but nothing against food bloggers and like young up and coming, but like you'll see aunties making making food in their, you know, old school way, and that's like where you get the true, sometimes the best authentic recipes to recreate at home. So
yes,
that's
exactly
probably the best way to do it. I think we're at a good point to take a break. And then when we come back from the break, we've been talking a lot about keto. We're throwing the word around. I think we need to take a step back and actually define what that means, like what the diet specifically means. And then kind of tie it back to some of the things we've talked about in terms of representing it through African food. And maybe you can give us some examples of food. Maybe we can talk about some popular African foods and how you can make them more keto friendly.
Sure.
Okay. So we'll take a break, and then when we come back, more keto talk.
I'm Ethan Frisch, co-host of Why Food and co-founder of Burlap and Barrel, a public benefit corporation working directly with smallholder spice farmers around the world to source unique, beautiful spices for professional chefs and home cooks. We set our partner farmers up to export their own crops for the first time, and they get access to a whole new market here in the US, and we get access to spices that other companies can't source. We're honored to work with restaurants including 11 Madison Park, Blue Hill, and Chez Panisse, as well as thousands of home cooks across the country. Visit us at burlapandbarrel.com.
So we're back and ready to talk keto. So when we've mentioned keto so many times, I'm sure, I mean, you can go Google it, but I want us to define it. What does a keto diet consist of? What does it mean to go keto?
So keto is actually short for the word ketosis, which is a state the body reaches where it doesn't burn glucose for fuel and burns fat instead. So to go on a keto diet, sometimes it's called low carb, high fats, which was the original
interesting
name.
Interesting. Okay.
Yeah. So it refers to eating kind of really low carbs, roughly 20 to 25 grams of carbs, medium protein, and high fats. When they say high fat, they don't mean, you know, just go gorge on every fat in existence.
Yeah, that actually almost sends a red flag when you say high fat. Because I'm like, I don't know if that's supposed to be good for you.
Yeah, I've learned the hard way that high fat doesn't mean just go gorge, because you can put on weight on the keto diet, actually. When they refer to high fat, they're talking about not only the good sources of fat, like avocado and nuts like peanuts or walnuts, you know, olive oil, just healthy fats that will make you full. So fat is actually what makes people full. You know, that's why when you drink 0% or skim milk, it feels empty because there's no fats. So fat is what makes you full. And you just need to eat enough fat to make you full. That doesn't mean that your plate of food should be swimming in 3 cups of olive oil. That's not the point. You know, usually, and like what I do is I like to eat an avocado almost every day.
Okay.
Because that is one of the best sources of healthy fats that will fill you up. And, you know, it's actually good for the body. So there is a right and a wrong way to do the keto diet. I've seen people just eat fat bombs. Okay, fat bomb is like a very high fat keto snack. And there's a time and a place for a fat bomb, you know, if you're just, sometimes if you're just run down, you need something sweet, you know, to perk you up. But I've seen people that just eat a ton of fat bombs every day and just consume all that fat. And then they come say, oh, you know, I've gained 5 pounds. Well, you're eating quite a bit of food. So the secret or the best way to do it is just make sure you're eating, you know, non-processed food. So even if you're going to eat some fat, make sure it's natural, you know, like I said, avocado and nuts, non-processed food. And then what happens is as your body tries to switch from burning glucose to burning fat, it enters a state where it's, the best way to say is like a little bit confused. It's like, wait, what's happening? Suddenly I have no glucose and I need energy. So most people have something called the keto flu.
Hmm.
So the keto flu, you kind of feel like you have the flu, like you feel run down because your body is trying to switch. Your body
is adjusting to you.
Thank you. For like all your life, your body used glucose as energy. And now you're not giving it what it needs. So your body doesn't understand what's going on. So there's a phase of 2 to 4 days where you really feel run down, like weak and tired, and you can make that a little better by having some electrolytes or broth soup to really balance the electrolytes in your body. But then when you go through that keto flu state, your body switches fully to burning fats for fuel, and I tell you, the result is amazing. You feel alert. Like for real, no more afternoon slumps. You don't feel run down after eating a heavy meal. You feel alert. Once you start eating keto foods the right way, even like I know the first thing that happened to me was that my sleep got regulated. I started getting tired at about 8 or 9 p.m. and waking up early because I'm a night owl. If you let me, I'll stay up 3 a.m. I'll be up for real. But it helps me regulate my sleep. It's like it resets things in the body.
I find that to be interesting because I've also spoken to a few people on, because I'm sure you've also seen there's a vegan movement in the African food community. So there's a lot of African vegan food. And one of the things I've always questioned, particularly with the vegan community, is the lack of certain nutrients that I didn't feel was as balanced, and that there were certain foods that were being added, or you know, whether vitamins or processed foods even, to make up for the nutrients that were missing. And so I mean while I respect people's decisions, I've never been fully convinced on the vegan diet, because I just didn't feel it was balanced. And I didn't know as much about keto until actually you shared it. I tried not to read about it. I wanted to hear it from you so I could react in real time. And it sounds more balanced, to be honest. It sounds like you have the carb. Like I remember growing up in school, what we learned in GSS or SSS. Like, you need to have your carbs, you need to have your fats, you need to have your proteins, you need to have a balanced diet in general. And then it's, I guess it's about the ratio, right, of what that looks like on your plate.
Exactly.
Which sounds probably more reasonable to me, I suppose.
Yes.
But you said, your family has adapted somewhat, or at least they don't have to change their diet as much. But I wonder, as you interact with people who come across your blog or just in general, what their reaction is, especially to the lower content of carb, like having a smaller portion of fufu. Like let's say we're not even changing the fufu recipe, but just a smaller portion. I would imagine that alone would be a challenge to overcome.
I have actually converted a few people. Like, I didn't even know I was a natural saleswoman. Like, I am a keto preacher. I'm all over the place. Like, if I meet someone and we get talking, I throw my blog in there somehow. I also have a food blog, you know? And they go, what's it about? And then it's like they open up the dam and I just let loose. I'm like, well, you know, I talk about the diet and the food we eat. And I always share my story because people relate to a story.
Right, yeah.
And I always talk about, and when people say, oh, the keto diet is not good or it's a fad, I get that a lot. Oh, it's a fad. Oh, psh, I've heard about that. It's not good. I'm like, well, this is how it helped me.
Yeah.
And immediately I get their attention. And then they go, wow, for real? I'm like, honestly, I'm telling you the truth. This is how it helped me. It might not be for everybody, but, you know, you can try it and see. It's not a life sentence. You could try it for 1 month. If you don't like it, then it's okay. And I've converted quite a few people with that conversation.
And actually, as I think about it now, I'm just processing as you're speaking, how with some of these, as you were talking about fads or whatever, you know, whether it's gluten-free, vegan, whatever, a lot of the times what makes it challenging, I think, for people in the African community to follow these lifestyles, if you will, is that you go online and you see the recipes that are out there, and it's like stuff that you don't relate with, right? And so you're looking at all these recipes or these ingredients and it's like, oh, the amount of work I have to to even like, one, I don't want to have asparagus or whatever it is, number one, because I don't, it's just not in my palate. And then, you know, so I have to adapt to that. And then on top of that, all the different other constraints that come with this new diet. And so, I think about, you know, your blog, you know, your Instagram account as like a great resource now that because I was thinking, as I was listening to you, I was thinking, okay, if I decide to do this, like, where would I go? And then it hit me, duh. Of course I would go to your site. Yeah. Because for me, like, we eat probably 80%, 90% African food. Yeah. And so a lot of the times when I think about, like, I've had weight issues and stuff, and every time I've tried to go on something, like, it meant having to give up African food completely.
Yes.
And so to do for something like this, and for you being a resource in that way, and especially considering the fact that you know you're doing a broad spectrum of food across the continent and not just Nigeria, I think it's really wonderful. And
thank
so
you.
As we let's talk about specific foods.
Okay,
so
sure.
Let's start with the number one, jollof. So if I was going to change my jollof to a more keto, low-carb friendly version, like how would I make it differently?
The most popular substitute for rice is cauliflower rice.
Oh.
And you hear a lot of people don't like it because they complain about, you know, it's not the same and it tastes weird. But I always tell them that, first of all, nothing can replace rice. I mean, rice is rice, right?
Yeah.
So we only need a close enough substitute that will kind of trick your brain that, you know, this tastes good. I like the taste. And that's all that really needs to happen. If your brain can connect and say, you know what? Oh, I feel like I'm eating jollof rice. This tastes just like jollof rice.
Yeah.
Then you're good. And so what I do is for regular rice, it has to, I mean, when you're making jollof rice, you know, you fry your blended tomatoes,
yeah,
pepper and onions, and you add your water. The rice has to cook, so you need all that water. And it takes a little longer because rice is, you know, it's kind of hard.
Yeah.
You have to cook it till it gets tender. But for cauliflower rice, you don't even have to. The process is so much shorter because all you have to do is, you know, after frying your blended vegetables, you just add the cauliflower rice and stir it. And I'm telling you, like, my husband is Nigerian. He is from a place called Ondo State. Any Nigerian listen to this podcast, when you hear I have a husband from Ondo State, they're going to go, oh, they don't joke with, like, their fufu and their dishes. They are not flexible at all. My husband will eat my keto jollof rice. And he's very blunt, and I encourage him to be blunt about how my food tastes because I need the real feedback.
Yeah.
He loves it because he goes, even though you know this is not rice, but the taste, the flavors are the same.
Yeah.
So, and that's what's important. If I can replicate these flavors in my dishes, that's really all that matters.
Okay, so I'm gonna, you've convinced me to try. I will try this cauliflower. I'll look up on your Instagram, on your blog, to see
All
the rest of
right.
people. Because I was gonna say, when you said cauliflower, like, I to be honest, I was skeptical, because also, you remember when I said I've done different diets and whatnot, I was trying to lose weight. So cauliflower always comes up, right? And I just never it just never clicked with me. I think, and maybe, like, you're right, maybe with when it absorbs, like, the flavor and the spices of the sauce, the jollof sauce, it may be a little bit more interesting. But I've just never enjoyed it, you know. And I think there was something about the texture. Like, I'll go and look at the recipe too, because I think maybe I also didn't cook it right, because it always came out a little bit, like, mushy. And I don't know if that's the way it's supposed to be. So maybe I'll follow specifically your recipe and maybe share. Actually, let's do it. I'll commit to that. I'll try it and share around the time this podcast comes out, so that, and then I'll give my verdict on how that goes. Because that for cauliflower for me is like one. Okay, so we've done jollof. What else? Fufu. Let's say fufu.
That's always a good one. Fufu is the first thing I tell people about fufu, like Nigerians. Like, I have a friend, a really close friend in Houston, and she, every time I talk about my keto fufu, she rolls her eyes. She's like, "Oh my God, I'm never gonna eat that." But then I ask her, I'm like, "Think about it. When you eat fufu, what is fufu made of? Fufu has no tastes. It's meant to be bland because the soup, you need to eat it with the soup, right?" And I'm like, "Think about it. We make fufu from all these different things, like, you know, cassava
Plantain, or
or wheat. I know in the north they make it with wheat, or corn, or different things." I'm like, "Well, sit down and try eating fufu without soup. You're gonna say it's nasty." I'm like, "That's the whole point of my keto fufu. It has no taste or flavor, so it's a perfect substitute because all you care about is the soup."
Yeah, that makes sense, actually.
Exactly.
That makes sense. So
So,
what's your replacement? What do you make fufu with? Well, how do you make a keto fufu?
I have about five, if I'm not mistaken, five keto fufu recipes.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so
Okay.
you know that I'm researching because I'm doing the work for you guys. So I have a cauliflower with cabbage, with eggplants, with almond flour, and with coconut
Wow.
flour. So
Cabbage.
yeah, with
Interesting. Okay.
cabbage. The
Interesting.
one thing that is common to all the different fufu recipes I have is a binder known as psyllium husk.
Okay.
So psyllium husk, so gluten-free flours or vegetables or anything that is not regular flour or has carbs doesn't have gluten, right? So gluten is what
Right.
binds it
Buns
together.
there. Yep.
But if you try to make keto fufu without gluten, I don't know what it's gonna look like. Good luck with that. It's not gonna work. You need the binder,
Okay.
and the
Okay.
binder, yeah, the binder is, you just need like a teaspoon, and it binds it, and you can get the whole fufu texture and the look.
Yeah, I mean,
But
I've seen pictures online, and it looks like if you didn't, especially, I think, like, stuff, the probably cassava, the ones that look whiter, it looks like fufu. Like, you wouldn't be able to tell unless you
You want,
knew what it
yes.
was made of. Yeah.
Yeah. The one I make the most, the newest one I have is an almond. I make that a lot because it's literally 2 minutes.
Oh, wow.
And I need something quick. Like, I'm like, "Oh, wow, there's soup in the house. All right, I'm getting my almond flour and making my fufu in 2 minutes, ready to eat."
So those are really good examples and really easy ways. I mean, you guys, if you're listening and want to try it, you can go online, check it out. But I will be trying the jollof one in particular, because this cauliflower thing has been the bane of my existence for years. So I want to see how it works in a jollof recipe. So what's next? You've done a lot up until now. What do you think is next for your blog, Low Carb Africa? What do you want to do next as you think about the upcoming, well, this year? Anybody's plans for this year, pretty much, for the most part, gone up in flames. But as you think about, the longer horizon, what do you hope or aspire to do with the blog?
I'm hoping, you know, sometime next year to get a cookbook out, because I've had a lot of requests about a cookbook. I might do an ebook and a physical one. I know that's a little bit more involved, but it's something I look forward to, you know, in the future. And I'm also, I know I'm a little ambitious with my plans. I'm hoping to appear on, you know, like all the TV network shows to really showcase African food. I don't really see that happen a lot. So I like to dream big. I don't know when that's going to happen, but my dream.
No, keep doing what you're doing. I think you have a unique spot in the food space, and just your viewpoint and your personal story in addition to it, I think makes a compelling case for being on bigger platforms, right? Because, and this is one of the things I always talk about online, about how you see a quote-unquote global cooking show or competition, and it's only Europe or America that's on. And
yes. You're like,
what's really global about this? But that's a story for another day. So before we transition to the rapid fire segment, can you let people know where they can find you online? So the blog, Instagram accounts, Facebook, what's the handle? What's the website?
Sure. So my blog is www.lowcarbafrica.com. Very easy to remember. I do low-carb African food. So lowcarbafrica.com. And I have the same handle with Facebook, Instagram, Pinterest, Twitter. You can find me.
Oh, you're on Pinterest.
I'm everywhere.
That's pretty smart, actually. I think, actually, that's pretty smart, because there's not a lot of people that I've spoken to that. And I've been thinking about going on Pinterest even for the podcast, because that's a place where people go to discover stuff a lot. Even I do. Like, I pin a lot of recipes on Pinterest, because then you can save it on your board and whatever. But I've never thought, you know, that's actually really good. So, I mean, I think whoever is listening, I know some of the people that listen on a regular basis are food bloggers also. Pinterest is a great platform. Yeah, I guess people miss out on. That's really good. I'll find you on Pinterest.
Thank you.
Great. Okay, so we're gonna transition to a rapid fire segment. I was gonna mention that you play the guitar. That's like a random thing I learned. I was like, that's really cool.
Yeah, I keep taking long breaks, and then when I go back, I forget what I've learned. But I'm very musical oriented. You know, I like music. I like to play instruments. I'm hoping to eventually learn how to play the piano as well.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah. One of my really good friends, the same actually. She I wouldn't say she plays. She was learning how to play the guitar, but she was taking piano seriously, and she was actually even she had a remote, like a Zoom piano instructor.
Oh, nice.
For a while, just because she was trying to recommit to it. So that's I just thought that was interesting, because there's very few people. She's also Nigerian, so I guess now I know two Nigerian women who play around with the guitar, if you will.
That's awesome.
Okay, so rapid fire. I actually think you answered this question earlier on, but let's see. Morning person or night person?
Night person, but I'm trying so hard to be a morning person.
Why though? Why do you try to force yourself to be something?
Because it's weird. I like staying up at late at night, but when I wake up early in the morning, I'm more productive.
So
I have a conflict going on in me, you know.
No, I'm definitely a morning person, and I find that I feel like by 3 o'clock, like, I hit a slump, and then there's nothing else like really productive I can do. Okay, starter or dessert?
Starter.
Not a sweet tooth. You don't have a
I have never tooth. Been a sweet tooth. You can almost, I don't have a lot of dessert recipes on my blog.
Yeah, that's true, actually.
I actually need to add more.
What's one ingredient you couldn't live without?
Bouillon powder, known as Maggi Cube in Nigeria.
Yeah, that's true. And then, would you rather lose your sense of smell or your sense of taste?
Let's see. Quickly. My sense of smell. That's a hard one.
Yeah, that's a hard one. I also feel like they are connected a little bit, actually.
Yeah, that's a hard one.
But, and then the last question, if you could live on one dish for the rest of your life, what would that be?
Cauliflower jollof rice.
Oh boy, okay.
Okay,
so I really should go and try this cauliflower jollof rice, is what I'm being told. All right, so on that high note, I'd like to thank you so much for your time. I learned so much from listening to your story and learning, you know, about this diet lifestyle. A lot of us have, and when I say a lot of us, I'm speaking specifically now about Africans and Africans in the diaspora. We have this connection to our food, and as we learn more about how our diet affects our health, especially as we grow older, it's hard to let go of what we've always known to be comfort food. And so it's great to come across people like you that are allowing us to enjoy our food in a way that is still healthy and good for us. So I appreciate the work that you do.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for listening to Item 13, an African food podcast. If you like the show, please subscribe, rate, and review us on your favorite podcast app. To keep up to date, follow us on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter at Item 13 Podcast. Item 13 is powered by Simplecast. Thank you for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Instagram and Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can also find us at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork. Heritage Radio Network is a non-profit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Subscribe to the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join the HRN family by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.
Hi, listeners. We want to tell you about a podcast we're really digging. It's called Christopher Kimball's Milk Street Radio. Every week, they travel the world to find the most fascinating stories about food, including children who harvest cod tongues after school in Norway, and a detective who tracks down food thieves. And on Milk Street Radio, you can always find the unexpected. The comedian who ranks apples using an elaborate 100-point system, the secret history of grocery stores, and how to eat your way through Italy. They also interview the most beloved names in food like Jacques Pepin, Sola Awele, Jose Andres, Jet Tila, Ina Garten, Nigella Lawson, and Padma Lakshmi. Plus, co-hosts Christopher Kimball and Sarah Moulton do live calls with listeners and answer their questions about ingredients, techniques, and culinary mysteries. Like, why roasting a leg of lamb made one caller's oven explode? Ever wonder why your bread won't rise or your souffle falls flat? Chris and Sarah have the answers. You'll also hear from a rotating cast of contributors, including Kenji Lopez-Alt, Cheryl Day, Dan Pashman from The Sporkful, and Alex Inouz, a French guy cooking from YouTube. Take a listen at 177milkstreet.com/radio or just search your podcast app for Milk Street Radio.